Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to It's a Fandom Thing. I'm your host, Erin Marlowe, and each week I'm joined by a panel of guests to discuss all things fandom and pop culture, primarily from a female perspective. You'll find everything from fanfic to cosplay to Schitt's Creek to Supernatural and everything in between. So put on your favorite piece of fandom merch, set aside that fanfic that you're writing about your OTP, and sit back and enjoy this week's episode. Hello, and welcome to It's a Fandom Thing. We are continuing our celebration of Pride Month with a look at John Waters. And I've been telling everybody I'm very excited for this because I remember a couple of years ago, we recorded our cult films episode, which we need to do another episode like that again. And no one else on my panel of cult film lovers, liked John Waters. And I was very ashamed of my panelists. I was like, seriously, nobody else likes John Waters. And I'm like, great, nobody likes John Waters. We're never going to do a John Waters episode. And then cut to me meeting my lovely, wonderful podcast brain twin, Jen, from my streaming bubble, and finding out that she loves John Waters. And I've already done an episode covering John Waters with her on my streaming bubble, so we'll try not to repeat everything we said on there. But go listen to that too. So please go listen to that episode and a couple others that we've done, and a bunch of other episodes of hers as well. It's a great podcast and Jen is amazing. So I'm very excited to talk about John Waters again. And I'm very excited that one of my panelists actually has taste. Just kidding. I love you all.
I have the best taste. No.
Yes, Jen has the best taste, though. I love all my panelists, but Jen has the best taste of all of you. I still just can't get over that. It's been 2 years, and I still can't get over the fact that I was the only one on a cult films pot. I don't know. It just seemed very weird to me, and everybody's like, yeah, he's not really my cup of tea. I don't know. I'm like, okay.
That's so bizarre to me. I almost don't know what's worse, like if people have never heard of John Waters or have heard of him and still are like, nah, pass.
Exactly. I know. I agree. My mom is not the biggest fan of his. I know that. She did listen to our episode, though, because my mom is one of those. I want to say something. I don't know if my mom will end up listening to this one, too. But whenever you start a podcast, one of the first things you're kind of told by other podcasters is that no one that you know, none of your friends, your family, they're not going to give a crap and they're not going to listen to your podcast. I know that sounds harsh, but it's true. Most of them will not listen to your podcast, which I try and listen to all my friends' podcasts, but that's just because I'm a better friend than everybody else.
You are, yes.
No, but I I love podcasts, so that's probably why. But it is something you learn. But my mom, she listens a lot. There are some that she won't listen to or some that she kind of just listens to the beginning. She's like, this is not for me, but she listens a lot. And she listens when I'm a guest on other podcasts as well. So my mom is an amazing supporter. I mean, my grandma is a supporter too, but my grandma doesn't quite understand podcasts. So she's never actually, I think she's heard a little bit that my mom played, but my grandma still thinks that people have to pay to listen to this.
Aww, grandma.
I wish I was making that money.
No shit.
But, you know, she's in her 90s, so love my grandma. But, yeah, she's very impressed by it. And I'm like, yes, it's very impressive. Anyway.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, so even though my mom is not a fan, she still listened to when I was on my streaming bubble. Uh-huh. I don't think she listened to Psycho Beach Party yet, but I know she listened to the Finn Wittrock one too. So She tends to, it's because it's me. It's not because she's because of Jen. No.
Hey, that's not quite all right. I'm not picky. I'll take a listen.
I'm kidding.
For whatever reason.
But anyway, so I do have Jen here. As Hi. Listeners can hear, obviously. There were a couple other people I really wanted to have on too. Not that I don't love just doing one with Jen. Bless, editing wise, it's a breeze. But unfortunately, because I'm kind of stupid and I plan a lot of the, and you know, it's Pride Month. And so a lot of people are doing things during Pride Month and can't ever come on podcasts. So maybe one year I'll record these way in advance. That'll never happen. But anyway, I'm a planner, but I don't have the time to do that. So Jen, though, before we dive into John Waters, what are you into right now in pop culture?
Dive into John Waters. I love you for that. Oh, well, as always, thank you again for having me. I always love being a guest on your podcast. And okay, so what have I been? Okay, well, I just finished rewatching season 4, part 1 of Stranger Things again. So, because the rule is when a new season of Stranger Things drops, I burn through it and then I'll rewatch it with my husband. So I finished watching it with him last night and he liked it. And I think he really felt like a connection to Eddie because, you know, kind of similar types, high school, you know, wise, but so Stranger Things. And then I also started rewatching the series as a whole. Cause I'm rewatching the first 3 seasons with all that season 4 information and trying to like fill in some of these pieces before part 2 drops. So I'm like super excited. And I'm actually recording my Stranger Things episode with my friend Laura. And she was my very first guest on my podcast where we covered Stranger Things season 3, which feels like forever ago because it was.
It was.
I'm really excited to get to that. And otherwise, trying to stay current on The Boys, Obi-Wan, and I'll probably rewatch Shorzy for the 3rd time soon. So I'm just like loving all the new stuff. There's still lots of other things I haven't gotten into yet, which I will once I kind of satisfy these other TV needs.
Okay, so I don't know what Shorzy is. I've seen you tweet about it, but I have no clue what this is.
So Shorzy is a spinoff series from Letterkenny. Shorzy was a character, just like a side character on the series Letterkenny. And you never saw his face. He always had just always talking shit. And so it's really been kind of interesting and fun to see because they really had like this 2-dimensional character. And they, at first I was like, I don't know what they're going to do with this character that all he does is talk shit. And it's hilarious and it's great. But they did an amazing job really kind of fleshing out this character and making him so he's not just some shit talking asshole. I think there's a bit of heart in there. But it's a Canadian series. It's Shorzy centers around hockey players and stuff. Whereas Letterkenny, it's kind of groups of people you kind of maybe see in these smaller Canadian towns. It's got like the Hicks, the Skids, which are like the goth / druggies, the hockey player jock types. So it's just the writing for both series is amazing. I love them both so much. They are, I think, very different in their own ways, but very similar, very like familiar feels to them. And they're hilarious. And I don't get all the Canadian references, and that's fine. I don't need to still enjoy the series and the acting and the writing. The writing is amazing. So they're really like Shorzy's is only like 6 episodes, 20, 25 minutes. So it's a pretty quick watch if you have the time. I know you're very, very busy, so but it's fun. It's kind of, you know, it's fun, it's light, it's funny. Shorzy's does have a lot more like Indigenous actors and characters, and they're not just side characters. They're people like in positions of power calling the shots, and that's just nice to see. And the one actor, I can't remember his name, but he plays Sanguinette. And he's just so adorable. I love him to pieces. I'm looking forward to a season 2. I don't think it's been announced, but I'm sure it will be.
Yeah. awesome. I'm like, I have no idea what this is that she keeps tweeting about, but I'm happy for her being happy. So yes. And I did like the first part of the new season of Stranger Things. I will say, you know, my biggest upset with this, with that show is I used to love Hopper so much. Hopper was like my favorite character. And then I don't like him anymore. Season three ruined him. And so, you know, that whole storyline, I was like bored to tears, I have to say, for him and Joyce. I was just like, whatever. But I think there are some amazing moments. I think the moment, I won't say for spoilers, but set to Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush is, I think, the best moment the show has had, period. I think it was incredible. And yeah, and I did karaoke last night, and we had like a private karaoke room, and Susie, frequent panelist, was there, and she sung that song along with everybody else too. So yes, it's a great song. It's a wonderful song anyway, but yeah, that moment was amazing. So.
Oh, I loved it. It was, I'll say is I fucking loved it, and it still hits just as strong as it did the first time watching it. Like the second time watching it, it was just as like impactful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty incredible. Well, I'm not into Stranger Things. I still love Stranger Things, and Steve is still the best character on the show. And it's amazing what they did with that character, how he went from the worst to the best. That's the best character growth I have seen on a television show, honestly, because it was so natural. And anyway,
100% agree.
Yeah. And he wasn't supposed to last. He was supposed to die in like the first season, but they liked the actor so much and the character that they didn't do that. Thank God. But I have been watching a very, very happy docuseries on Hulu called The Deep End. And it's all about spiritual guru Teal Swan. Whew, this lady. Trigger, big trigger warnings for suicide, sexual abuse, all this stuff. She, just go look her up. I'm not going to say too much, but the reason I give those trigger warnings is a lot of what she talks about is relating to suicide. And her stuff is, I don't think, good, but that's all I'm going to say. And this is kind of like, a lot of people say she's like a cult leader. I think she is. She is in this, like she had this documentary crew following her around. And I think she's such a narcissist. And I think she thought it was going to be this positive thing about her, and it's not. And she's very angry now. But she has like millions of views on YouTube, and yeah, and I had never heard of her before, and somebody mentioned this one in response to another true crime. I think it was actually MJ, who's been on here before as a panelist. And yeah, it's intense though, so it'll make you very angry. She's an awful person in my opinion, but I watched it and it makes me scared because I know a lot of people that would easily be like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, fall for her stuff. So I won't say much about her except for just watch it, but beware of those triggers, and they do give you them beforehand, but just beware of that. Okay, so let's lighten it up a little bit after I mentioned that heaviness with John Waters. So first, and I know I stole this question from Jen, this one I know I stole, I'm pretty positive. But Jen, what was your first introduction to John Waters?
Oh, so you did steal this question, but that's okay. It's an important question. It's an important question to ask people when talking about John Waters. You know, it's like the meme of like, you judge people on who they know Tim Curry from.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that meme. We should cover Tim Curry.
Oh yeah. sorry, that was weird. So I think I was trying to remember, and it's got to be one of like the 90s, the more mainstream ones, either like a Crybaby or Serial Mom or Hairspray. So it was somewhere around the time those three movies came out. I saw one, I want to say probably Crybaby, because my huge mega crush on Johnny Depp for most of my hormonal years. And then I think from there and just kind of learning about John Waters and everything and his style, I saw then eventually saw like the other 90s ones, Crybaby and Hairspray. And then a little bit of like kind of the later ones, Cecil Be Demented. And I had heard of Pecker, but I didn't watch that really until like we did the episode for my podcast. But and then I had heard of, you know, Pink Flamingos and like the early stuff. So it was interesting to watch those for the pod prep. And they are very visually impactful, where I was like, I think I'm good. I don't think I need to rewatch those. So, but I did watch a few that I didn't get in the last time for my episode. But yeah, so I would say, yeah, probably Crybaby is the most likely answer.
Yeah, and I, you know, it would be between that and Hairspray, but I'm pretty positive it was actually Hairspray. That was my first one. It was definitely not his first films. It was definitely not the films that I think he has more like quote unquote mainstream films, and then ones that are not definitely not mainstream films, which are his earlier stuff. So yeah, it was definitely, I'm pretty positive it was Hairspray, but it could have been Crybaby too. And you know, I'm not a Johnny Depp fan at all anymore, but I really was. And it was because of Crybaby though. That's the thing, is it wasn't before Crybaby. I went and saw Crybaby and I actually was not necessarily a fan. I wasn't watching 21 Jump Street or anything like that. And then I became a fan because of Crybaby. So it's a little bit different, but I was kind of obsessed with that film in a way. I was a big, big fan of that one. So, and we'll get into that one a little bit here, but yeah, I would definitely say Hairspray probably. And I had it like on VHS, like recorded off the TV though, you know, like an VHS tape. And I watched that one a lot too. And I know a lot of people hate on the remake, including Jen. I actually like it, so you know. I'm sorry, but I do.
I prefer the original, and that's, well, yeah. There's just something about John Travolta that, as Edna Turnblad, that's just kind of nightmarish, and I didn't care for it.
No, I understand, but I mean, I would like to see it on stage, the stage version sometime.
Oh yeah,
just I think that would be interesting, but. Okay, well, let's talk about that early career, because these were the films that really pushed the boundary. And, you know, he's said, you know, he prides himself on being like a master of filth. And what was that was said in that thing I sent to you? No, I can't remember. The Godfather of Filth, pretty much.
Something like that.
Yeah. So he prides himself on this.
Pope of Filth, I think. Yes, I've seen also. Yeah,
yes. So he's very happy about this. I mean, his movies like Multiple Maniacs, Pink Flamingos, of course, is one of the biggest ones that's known, Female Trouble, a bunch of others, really pushed that envelope and did really gross and disgusting things, quite frankly. Yes. And embraced really weird and out there characters. And John Waters has always embraced actors. We'll get into Divine shortly here, but always embraced actors and people that are shunned from society in a lot of respects and are considered outcasts. And of course, you know, LGBTQIA+ is definitely part of that, because John is an out gay man. But he's always embraced people that society turns from. And that's one of the things I've always appreciated about him. And I think his early works, especially, were not for everybody. And he knew this. I mean, you know, somebody eating dog shit that actually was dog shit is not going to appeal to everybody.
No, not really. Surprising, huh?
I know. It's such a shocker that all my other panelists on our Cult Movies episode didn't like John Waters. I guess I should have known. So, Jen, I know some of these you watched for the first time in preparation for the episode that I did with you on your podcast. But what are your overall thoughts on his early films and that more pushing the boundaries of filth?
So I have to say, like, I don't know Only John Waters could make those movies and have them be disgusting and vile and gross and, you know, offensive and hard to watch. But it's still, but still done in a way that's kind of like so lovingly and like, even though they're not for everyone, the fact that like three of them, if not like four, are part of the Criterion Collection, I think says a lot.
Yes.
I appreciate them and I respect them for what they are and what they've done and how they've contributed to the world of film and filmmaking and that pushing the boundaries and that gross out and everything. Don't know that I'll go back and necessarily need to rewatch any of them anytime soon, but I can't think of anybody else that could get away with that, get away with those images, those writings, those off the wall storylines, these wild fucking stories, getting his actors and his the acting troupe that he always worked with, the Dreamlanders, I think they were called, that they were just like all in as well. Like, I don't, who else? So there's something very magical about him to make these movies and have these movies then be respected enough to be part of the Criterion Collection, which still just blows my fucking mind. And I love it because I think that also shows that they're not super like pretentious or anything, you know, that they will respect all forms of art in film media and everything. Mm-hmm. But I love it. I mean, I don't love it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to watch someone eating dog shit or being assaulted by a giant lobster or weird sex scenes in churches and stuff like that. Or like, yeah. But I think there's a lot there in the fact that he had the gall to like show all that and push those boundaries. You know, would we really have any of these other kind of gross out, or, you know, I feel like he paved the way for that kind of genre or that kind of filmmaking, and set the standard and show how you can make disgusting movies but do them like very well, even like a good campy, you know, like not like Oscar well, but like just done where everyone is, they're all in. And so you can tell, you know, no one's really like kind of holding back or whatever. They're all in at least enough for those scenes. Yeah, I don't know what else to say. I'm just kind of rambly because I'm just like, it's still Criterion Collection.
I know. It's awesome.
I'm just going to scream that over and over. So, I mean, I really do think that that says a lot about these movies, those earlier works. So I did get in Desperate Living, which I didn't watch for the last time. Mm-hmm. And out of that, because I think that's one third of the Trash Trilogy.
Yes.
I actually really liked that one. There were still a lot of parts where I was like, ew, gross, I don't like it. It's icky, but it's like that icky that makes you giggle. You're like, oh no. But you keep watching. So that one, I did really like Desperate Living. That one I may watch again sometime in a couple of years.
In a couple of years. Yeah, I mean, I love what you said about, you know, that even though there's gross out stuff and there is quote unquote filth, these are filth films, there's a lot of love there. I mean, he loves the people he works with. You can tell he loves the weird. He loves the outcasts. And that's why I think people who love John Waters love John Waters. A lot of those people feel like outcasts or have felt like outcasts at some point or another. And John embraces those people or doesn't judge those people. You know, I think that's the big thing, is he doesn't judge people in the way that society normally judges people, you know. And with these films, that's very clear. I mean, yes, there is stuff in here that, for me, the hardest thing to watch was in Multiple Maniacs when the guy's licking the armpit. That, to me, was more disgusting than anything else. And the reason is I just kept thinking, okay, does that person have, like, deodorant remnants? Are there other things they're getting on their tongue? And I'm not to kink shame, because everybody knows I will never kink shame, not me. So not to do that, but it's just like not my thing. So it's just kind of like, ew, squicked me a little bit. Mm-hmm. More than probably almost anything else in his movies, I'll be honest. There's something about that just really, ew, because I just keep thinking about that, like, tasting deodorant or like lint or
no, that's, I get you though.
I'm grossing Jen out just talking about it a little bit here. But these movies, you know, for me, I will say honestly, and maybe this doesn't make Jen and I like the big devoted John Waters fans, because I know there are a lot of people that argue that this is more John Waters than the other stuff he did. And there is that kind of argument there. But for me, his more quote unquote mainstream stuff is always going to be more appealing to me. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that I don't appreciate what he's doing here, because what he's doing here is he's pushing boundaries. He's telling people it's okay to push boundaries. You don't have to do, every movie doesn't have to fit a formula, and every movie doesn't have to have actors that fit a formula. They don't all have to look the same. They don't all have to look like Barbie and Ken, for lack of a better, you know, synonym there, better way of phrasing it, because I think that's what he was doing. I mean, a lot of these actors were not getting cast in other things, or would have a hard time with that, or, you know, he always embraces people that aren't necessarily a size two. He's always been like that, and that's pretty amazing. Or people that are in the community, he of course embraces that and is very open about that. And so I think that is what you can appreciate about anything he does personally, is the fact that he has opened a lot of doors for people that never had doors opened for them before. And I know a lot of people that have worked with him have talked about that. And also a lot of people that are in the mainstream and have worked with him, you know, or were in the mainstream, I think they had a lot of fun, or it was like some of the most fun they've ever had, because they were able to be so weird and different and didn't have to fit that movie star mold. And so that's what I really, really appreciate about John, is that. And he's just so weird, but in a great, wonderful way. He's so, I mean, I honestly, really, I've got to work on a way to have this happen, but I would love to interview him, because I've listened to interviews with him and he's fascinating and he's so smart. I mean, he is one of the smartest men I've ever listened to. He's brilliant. I mean, really, he's just incredible and sweet, so sweet. And, you know, that's why I was hoping to have Tyler on here, and Tyler's actually met John, and I don't know how long he met John for, and I don't know if they had like a long conversation or anything, but I would have loved to have, you know, heard stories about that, if he could share any of those. But yeah, so
God, how cool would that be, just to be in the same room as John Waters and breathe the same air as John Waters and just like be within proximity?
Yes. No, I think that would be amazing. It's one of those, he's one of those people that I would just be like in awe of, to be able to be there and be in the room with. So
yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, of course, John Waters worked extensively with Divine until Divine sadly passed away. And Divine was, I think, John's biggest muse, you know, kind of his other half in some ways artistically. And there's a great documentary that was on Netflix. I should check and see if it still is, about Divine. And of course, John Waters is on there too, of course. And it's a great, great documentary. And I'll have to look up the name of it. Why didn't I write that down?
I think it's just I Am Divine.
That's right. Thank you. It's called I Am Divine. So hopefully it's still on Netflix. I will look and see if it is. But if it's not, it's worth it to rent it, to go to your local library, see if they have it there. I'm saying that for Jen.
That's right. Support your local library, folks. Because, you know, sometimes you just don't want to pay for a movie.
Yes, exactly.
Your library has it.
And then also just supporting your local library is a good thing to do. Well, it looks like it's on Tubi right now, which means you will, but you can rent it for $2.99 on Prime, which means you will have to deal with weird commercials. Although Tubi, I have to say, even though they have weird commercials in places, they haven't figured out the algorithms right. Mm-hmm. Tubi is actually great for finding movies that other places don't carry. So I will give them props for that. And I understand why they have to have ads, because revenue, and they're not charging you anything. But I wish they'd figure their algorithms out. So agreed. It's not so weird.
Agreed.
But go watch that and learn more about Divine, because Divine was amazing and an amazing artist. And it's very interesting watching that and learning more about their relationship and Divine's relationship with their parents and stuff too. So what are your, I know you love Divine too, but what are your overall thoughts on Divine and Divine in the canon of John Waters movies too?
Oh, I love it. I mean, could we really have John Waters movies without Divine? And could we have Divine without John Waters? They just go hand in hand, like chocolate and peanut butter or something. Or I don't know why my brain was like vodka and lemonade. Sorry.
Vodka and lemonade, huh?
It's one of my favorites. It reminds me of summer, and I got the sun shining on me now. Anyways, they're a great team. And when I was watching, Desperate Living, Desperate Living, because Divine's not in that, because Divine had other contractual obligations or whatever. And so it was kind of, that is the one thing I missed about that movie, was that there was no Divine. And kind of knowing which character Divine was supposed to play, it was just like, oh yeah, would have fucking killed it, obviously. But so I love the way those two worked together. I love that John has always referred to, especially in the documentary, several times, I think he refers to Divine as his muse. And I think that's just so lovely and so beautiful that he, in this other human that they've crossed paths. I can't remember exactly how they met, but that ever since then, that they clicked, and that it wasn't just some, you know, gorgeous starlet or some handsome Hollywood hunk in jeans or something. It was a large man doing drag, you know, as the Divine character. And then that's what they worked with. And that's what he wrote some of these parts for Divine. Mm-hmm. And I love that, because it goes again with what you were saying about John embracing and supporting kind of the weird, the non-traditionals and everything, and really just making that the star out of Divine. And then in watching the documentary, finding out that Divine just really wanted to be in more movies, and not as Divine, but as a man. And it's so sad. It would have been really, really interesting to see where that career could have gone for him. So that's a shame, but like I said, you can't have one without the other. They're one of the best filmmaking teams, I think. And I was going to try and get in Lust in the Dust, even though it's not a John Waters movie. It is a Divine and another Tab Hunter movie, but wasn't able to get it in. I did put it kind of lower on my list since it wasn't John Waters, but just kind of reading that John was asked to direct it and he turned it down because he didn't write it, I thought just was kind of, I loved that. I was like, he doesn't want to direct someone else's vision, or he doesn't want to put his name to someone else's story. And I get that. That's cool. But it would have been, I would have been curious to see, like, had John written that story and directed it with Divine and Tab again, how that could have turned out. I'll watch Lust in the Dust, because there's something about the whole Western feel that really intrigues me. And I don't care for Westerns, but I really want to see that one. but again, you know, that's a Divine movie with no John, but, and then just to see how that would have compared to Divine's works with John. So I miss that team up, that duo. They were so perfect together.
Yeah, they were. They were like a family. They were, you know, just very close, I think. And, you know, when you have someone like that artistically and you're working artistically, you know, with Divine being John's muse for so long, you know, and it's not that the films after Divine died aren't great as well. It's just you can feel that there is that loss still. You still can feel like, oh, I wonder what this film would have been like if Divine had been able to be in this one, if Divine was alive still. And I'm sure for John, it's got to be also feel like a part of himself is missing, a part of his soul and his heart and his creativity, his muse is missing. And so I would love to, that would be part of what I would love to talk to about, you know, I mean, I'm sure he's talked about it to death and he doesn't want to anymore, but that kind of thing of like what that's like when you lose part of your creative team and part of your heart, really. And I don't want to say you can tell that, because I don't think the quality of films go down. It's just you can tell there is a little bit of something missing. There's a little bit of heart missing there. Not that there's not heart. I just mean like there's just a little, like a piece of the puzzle missing there. And it's not quite completely together without Divine. You know.
I completely agree. It's like you said, it's like a piece of the puzzle is missing. And, you know, a lot of puzzles, they're cut from like the same laser planner, you know, whatever. So it's like you're missing the one piece of the puzzle. So you take another piece from another puzzle that happens to fit and it works, but it's just, it's not the piece that you need. It fits, it works, it completes the picture, but you can tell that something is still just a little off. You still love it, but it's just, like you said, something, a little something still kind of missing.
Yeah. 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 But really go watch that documentary. It's really, really good and really interesting. And it gave me a whole new appreciation for everyone, really. So absolutely. Yeah, I definitely recommend that. And it's always,
And have tissues handy.
Yes.
Because you'll cry.
Yes, I agree. I was going to say, it's always funny when I see, you know, you see older John Waters with his long hair. It always cracks me up because I'm so used to seeing his little short hair and his little pencil mustache. And so seeing like that long hair, it just always throws me every time.
It's a trip. It's, yeah, it goes against like what you're used to. You're like, oh no, yes. But okay.
Yes, I prefer the short hair, but it's sweet. It's the very young John. So, but yeah. So let's move on to his more quote unquote mainstream works like Hairspray, Crybaby, and I even would consider Serial Mom more mainstream. And there are other movies that came after these that I think are kind of in the middle. Like I think Cecil B. DeMented is more him trying to go back to a little bit of his earlier stuff. Same with, well, Pecker, not so much sort of, but you know. And then like stuff like Low Down Dirty Shame, I think in a way was also trying to go back a little bit to that filth stuff. But I think those three, Crybaby, Serial Mom, and Hairspray, I think are his three mainstream ones is how I kind of would classify them. And I know Hairspray was the first thing for John that was a big hit and was critically acclaimed and got Divine a lot of attention, which is why it's so sad that Divine passed like right around that time. So it would have been interesting to see. But so I know you love all three of these. So what are your overall thoughts on these? And then if there's a favorite among those three? I know you asked me this on yours, so I'm asking you too. I didn't put it on outline either. I'm just throwing it in there for you.
Oh, shit. Curveballs. No. Careful. She's got gotcha questions. No, I'm just kidding.
Gotcha questions.
Oh, I would think, okay, so I love Hairspray because, you know, just that overall kind of message of, you know, the racial inequality and, you know, the segregation and everything. It's, you know, so you've got that, which is very, so these more mainstream ones, these top three are the more, you know, like, yeah, palatable ones. So it's doesn't really surprise me that like Hairspray has kind of like that racial plot line to it that people, I think, probably were drawn to. And Debbie Harry and Blondie. And so I, you know, obviously I like that. They show some, a couple of beatniks and, you know, some special cameo beatniks. And then, so that one's kind of, I feel like that's an easy one to like, is Hairspray. Ricky Lake is just adorable in it. And then, what's his name? Seinfeld dad, or not Seinfeld, but Stiller, Ben Stiller. Yes. Nope, Jerry Stiller. Nope,
Jerry Stiller, Ben Stiller's dad.
Yeah. I got there eventually. So I think Hairspray is, like I said, is an easy one to like. It's got, you know, the dancing show and everything and trying to be on TV. And so it does kind of make you want to get up and do the twist or do the roach or whatever little dances that they've got going on. Crybaby, because of my giant crush on Johnny Depp, and, you know, you've got like the drapes versus the squares. I fucking love that because I always loved, you know, like the bad boys and the motorcycles and the black leather jackets and everything. And then you've got Susan Tyrell and Iggy Pop, and Iggy Pop's naked in a bucket. And that's just fucking delightful as all hell. And so I think that one I felt a bit more drawn to when I was younger, because I kind of, even though I wasn't at all like a drape or anything, I felt like maybe inside I was like, I was a drape sympathizer. But I just love the outcasts and just kind of like that, you know, that group of people in society. And, you know, I love Hatchet Face and Sometimes Shook Up Old Ladies Gets Cuts. It's one of my favorite Hatchet Face lines. And then Serial Mom, I feel like maybe that one might have been the last of this trilogy that I saw, but I can't remember exactly, so don't hold me to that. But seeing Kathleen Turner, someone that I'd only known from, you know, like, quote, air quote, like real Hollywood movies, play this role of what was her name? I don't remember.
We are doing really great today.
We're fucking nailing it. But to see her play this character and then see her play opposite of John Waterston as the husband, and see, because I've only ever known him as like Jack McCoy from Law and Order. So this was like, what is happening here? And it blew my mind. But I love Serial Mom so much. And I feel like as I get older, I appreciate Serial Mom more. I'm not saying I'm going to go run over my kid's principal for any silly Serial Mom reason or bludgeon my neighbor with like a ham steak or something. But there's times where I'm like, huh, what would Serial Beverly Sutcliffe?
Yes. Something. I was going to say Beverly. I didn't want to interrupt you, but yes, Beverly. No,
that's all right. But yeah, it's like, what would Beverly do? Now, which one do I love is a favorite? God, that's really hard.
You're welcome.
You know, there's that kind of nostalgic attachment to Crybaby. But again, like I said, there's the appreciation of Serial Mom more and more as I get older. Plus a young Matthew Lillard. How adorable is he?
Yes.
He's so cute. And he works at the video store, like that super small indie video store. He's a horror movie buff. Like, how can you not fucking love that? And then just the way that her case, you know, towards the end gets like sensationalized. Like, that is so real life. And then, I think I'm still going to go Crybaby, because even though that one's the musical, I love the songs. I love all the songs, like Please Mr. Jailer, Willem Dafoe's weird random cameo in it. Oh, I just thought of never mind. I was going to say a 6 Degrees of Finn Wittrock, but nope. I was like, nope, that's a Nicolas Cage one. My bad. Oh my Lord. I'm just the best guest today. Okay, sorry. But yeah, crybaby, final answer.
That was hilarious. I'm sure there's a Finn connection to William Dafoe too. I'm positive.
Probably.
Well, like I said, Hairspray was the first one I saw, and I love Hairspray a lot. I think Hairspray of all three of them is the most mainstream because I think it's something that, you know, I was a little kid when I saw it, and little kids can watch it. It's not like, you know, I mean, it's not like really, really out there. It doesn't push a lot of boundaries. And I think that's why that one became the most, I don't think it was the most critically acclaimed, but it was became the most mainstream, like hit kind of thing.
Most marketable.
Yes. Thank you. That's because it, you know, you could have little kids watching it and adults liked it. And I think that's why it also became the one that became a musical. Although I'm sure Crybaby could have been that too, because it already was. But I think that's why, because it was more mainstream, the most mainstream of them. And it was the first one that was. And it's the first time, of course, that John Waters started working with Ricky Lake, who became another big thing for him. And she's in all three of these that we're talking about, of these three. And she did become a staple as well. And she also was not the Hollywood type. She was, you know, she wasn't size two. She wasn't, you know, the quote unquote Hollywood attractive. But John always embraces that and still gives those people a love story. I mean, she has this amazing love story. And I was telling Jen, I found out some trivia because I was wondering, whatever happened to that actor? And it turns out he left acting. Like, he became like a pastor and worked like with inner city youth and in Harlem and all that. And he was like, I'm just done with business. Didn't even care. So it wasn't like he couldn't get jobs anymore. He just quit the business. I just thought that was a really interesting little tidbit of trivia there. But, you know, it's like John finds her attractive and finds the beauty in her and that most of society shuns. And I'm sure for Ricky Lake, she speaks very highly of John Waters. And I'm sure for her at the time, being so young and being in an industry that doesn't embrace anyone who isn't a size two really, or doesn't fit this weird standard of beauty that most people can't reach, even the people that supposedly reach it have a hard time with it. I'm sure for her, that had to be just absolutely amazing and life-affirming. And, you know, especially to be viewed and to be filmed as someone who is desirable and who is sexy and attractive. And it's another thing to appreciate and love about John. And you really see it in Hairspray. And you see it in Crybaby a lot, too, with Hatchet Face and Ricky Lake's character in there too. And, you know, because Hatchet Face is thought of as not being attractive, but her boyfriend loves her and thinks she's the most attractive, beautiful woman in the world. And she, even though she comes off as very tough and strong, she's very sensitive and vulnerable. And, you know, it's that kind of stuff. And then also with Crybaby, you have Tracy Lords, who very famous stuff with Tracy Lords, that she was very, very abused in the adult film industry and stuff. And, you know, for someone in that industry to cross over to mainstream films is very rarely done. And it's very rarely done in a way where people aren't looking at them like trash. Mm-hmm. And John doesn't look at her like that. So I'm sure for her, that was also an amazing, beautiful experience to have too. And I know it becomes like a family. They all become like a family. And for me, Crybaby was like I said, I was like kind of obsessed with this movie. And I made my poor mom, speaking of my mom, I made my mom drive me to go see this movie in the pouring rain. I remember it was just pouring rain because it was in the summer. And drove me to go see this movie that I'm sure she could have cared less about this movie. But I loved it. And the whole opening and the teardrop. And I mean, it's like I watch it now and I still love this movie, but I watch it now and I'm just kind of like, oh my gosh. But to me, it was so sexy. Mm-hmm. It was like the sexiest thing. And I still, you know, everybody knows black hair, leather jacket. Mm-hmm. That's still my biggest weakness. So he had that. And then singing and the music, it's just like boom, 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 boom. And, you know, for me, these characters later on in different decades would become like, you know, beatniks were basically an offshoot of this. And then I think later on when you had goths, that's an offshoot of this too, I think. So, of course, I was more attracted to people like that and wouldn't be attracted to the squares at all. No.
No, thank you. Too much khaki.
Yes. Yes. So I love that one a lot. And then Serial Mom, this one I think is the best as far as like written, the best performances, the best everything overall. I think it's the most well-made of the three, honestly. And Kathleen Turner, she has said this is one of her favorite experiences she's ever had doing a movie. And you can tell that she mm-hmm. is having so much fun playing this character. And just the way she delivers little lines, like whenever she's doing the prank calls with the and she gets so giddy about it. It's like, you know, and when she gets so, she's writing all these serial killers in jail and all this stuff she's doing and how excited she gets to watch horror movies with her son. Yet she doesn't, you know, yet there are certain things she can't handle, she won't stomach. You have to still have that perfect suburban stuff. But at the same time, she's like, let's watch the goriest horror movie ever.
She's like, she sits down, she grabs her remote. She's like, oh yeah, let's watch that part again. Yeah. She's just wide-eyed like a child, like a kid in a candy store, just excited. You gotta love it.
Yes. Yes. And the fact that, you know, she gets off. And of course, in that one of the jurors is Patty Hearst. And then, of course, that scene where Patty Hearst is wearing white after Labor Day. She's just like, you can't wear white after Labor Day, and kills her. And it's just like, it's just like the most ridiculous and out there thing ever. And it's like, it's a family, though. And I know I mentioned this on your podcast. This family, though, really loves each other, even though they're kind of afraid of Beverly, but they still really love her. And the sex her and her husband have.
It's the funniest. That's why it's same, like Jack McCoy, you guys, Law and Order fans, like that's just, it was weird.
And they're so loud and so like
bouncy.
Because it is that like prim and proper, and then that, or when one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when Beverly's on the run from the cops and they go to like that, the what was the band? Was it L7?
L7, yeah.
But they go to the L7 concert, and she's up there, and she's like, and her husband's down in the crowd. She's like, oh, and she's plugging her ears, like, oh, it's so loud. And she's just like, she's on the run from the cops, and she's just like all merry and happy. And she even takes time out to, you know, try and kill somebody. And it's just like,
she supports female artists. So
yeah, it's just so fun. But so I love that one. And I do appreciate that more rewatching it. I think that one is so well done and so well written. And Kathleen Turner's performance is so incredible. She is so dang good in that movie. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard not to pick that one. I mean, because it's really between that and Crybaby as my favorites. And Crybaby, same as Jen, is kind of the nostalgia feel. But just to be different, I'll say Serial Mom. Just to be different. I don't know if that's what I said on your podcast. Now I can't even remember now. But I'll just say that just to be a little bit different.
Fine. So much for podcast brain twins. No. But you know, we talk, you talk about how in Serial Mom, Beverly loves her family. In watching all of these movies then, and even some of the, like I watched Polyester today.
Yeah.
And it's like these people, like as wild and out there as these characters are, I think that's kind of one thing that can be said for a lot of them, not all of them, is that they love their family. You know, in Polyester Divine, she's happy to have her kids back and they've gotten the help that they've needed. And Jesus, and they've run over people and it's fine because they're together. I really liked Polyester. I almost feel like Polyester is kind of that like missing link between the early filth and the mainstream stuff. It's that stepping stone between the two because it's not as out there as his first set of movies. And it's not as like toned down filth wise as, you know, Hairspray, Crybaby, or Serial Mom. There's still elements of those there, but we don't get the visuals like we did in the other ones. So I thought that was kind of, in watching Polyester, I was like, this is kind of really interesting when in the scope of his movies and kind of watching that progression from his early works of the 70s into the 80s and 90s. And so I was like, huh. Because what, Polyester was like early 80s, I think, like 80 think or so. 81. Mm-hmm. So it's not technically 70s, but yeah, I kind of was starting to pick up like there's a theme of family, love, acceptance, even in Desperate Living, even though like the queen hates her daughter and everything. The community of Mortville loves each other enough to overthrow the queen. And in Desperate Living, I had like with the queen storyline, it just gave me like vibes of like Marie Antoinette, you know, like the story of Marie Antoinette, but told through the lens of John Waters, which I thought, I don't know, that maybe it's just me, but I really loved it because I also really love that movie too, Marie Antoinette. But yeah, just that theme of family and that acceptance, because yeah, he accepts all his freaks and weirdos and everything, and they're all together and they all love and care for each other and fight for each other. And in the movie, these characters kill for each other or each other. So it's kind of like the first time I really kind of noticed that underlining theme through nearly all his movies. So I think, yeah, just that love, that loving of each other.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And the family isn't always biological, you know, in Crybaby, yes. You've got a lot of found family and a lot of, and in Multiple Maniacs and stuff like that, that starts even there where you have that found family. And where it is very much that can be an even stronger bond than you will have with your biological family. And that is a theme. And I think that's because that's the way John is with the people he works with. I think they've all said it's like a family. They're all family coming together. They protect each other. They love each other. You know, they embrace each other. And so I think that comes through with all of his movies is that you do have that theme there, whether it is your biological family, like in Serial Mom or in Polyester, you know, even if your son is obsessed with foots to a degree of breaking them, even if you have that to deal with, you still love your family.
Yep.
You know, and even if your mom is a serial killer,
that's right. She's Serial Mom and she's our mom. Proud. Yeah.
So that is a big theme, and I think that's something that a lot of people can relate to, a lot of the, and especially the found family thing, because a lot of people, you know, with us releasing us around Pride, a lot of people in that community are, you know, abandoned by their family, kicked out by their family, treated like crap by their family. You know, you have stuff like that goes on in Hairspray, you have stuff like that going on in Crybaby. And throughout, where the biological family shuns their child for not fitting into what is supposed to be the heteronormative world. And so I think having that family thing and embracing people, I'm sure John being, you know, growing up as a gay man, especially in the time period that he grew up in, I mean, it's hard now still. I'm not saying it's not still hard, and especially with certain things going backwards instead of forwards. Mm-hmm. But back then, it was even harder and illegal and all this stuff. And so he took a lot of chances. And I'm sure a lot of the themes with the family are because he found his family. And he may or might not have had it. So I think that's what's so beautiful about his movies and about all the people he works with.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
So I just want to talk a little bit about that, about his embracing of the weird and the outcast and how important that is to either you personally or to the broader community as a whole.
I mean, I love it. In a world and in a society where, quote, normal is what's accepted and is what is expected, to have this skinny man with a pencil mustache come in and be like, the weirder you are, the more I love you. Come here. You are my daughter. You are my son. You are my child. One of my favorite stories is from the set of Crybaby. And it's on like the DVD special, like commentary or whatever. But the feds had come to arrest or take Tracy Lords away. And she was very, you know, very scared, very worried, very nervous about it. And kind of afterwards, they all went around and shared their, this is the time I got arrested story and helped put her at ease. And it's like, one, the fact that everyone had a story is, it's almost like a prerequisite to work with John Waters. It's like, he's got his little checklist. It's like, have you been arrested? How many times and for what? Okay, you're hired and you're the lead. No. So I think it's really important that, you know, we have a writer director that's puts these quote weirdos, you know, instead of on the back burner, up front and center stage, gives them a voice, gives them a story, gives them love interests, and fleshes out, like, makes them real people, real characters, because they exist. Oh my God. So shocking. So I think it's really, I think it's so important that, and especially the way he does it so lovingly, as we've said 1,000 times by now, but that we have that, and that people can go to see his movie and probably see maybe a little bit of themselves in maybe this character or that character, or relate to a situation, maybe not exactly, but just that kind of overall feel of it. So I think that it's, we definitely need more of that, so we can kind of get that representation on screen of, it's okay that you don't fit, quote, the norm, because you will always be, someone will always accept you. There's a family out there for you, and they're just waiting for you, and you're waiting for them, and you'll find each other, and it will be beautiful. I think that's the most important thing. And I think that everyone can relate to that. You know, I think, you know, even if you're like the pretty popular kid at school or whatever, you might feel the pressures of having to maintain that and wanting to maybe diverge from that or whatever. I think you can still find solace in a John Waters film and find a way to relate and be like, oh, and validate it and feel validated in what you're feeling and thinking. And I think that's important. And like I said, it's who else is going to do it better than John Waters? I don't know who, but we definitely need more folks to step up and give it a try.
Yes. So well said. Seriously, that was really, really well said. Because I think, you know, for me personally, always feeling a little weird and a little bit, you know, out of the norm and not really like didn't know how to fit into normal. So I still don't know how to fit into quote unquote normal. Like my nightmare is going to like, you know, regular with people that are quote unquote regular. And this happens. So it's like, I've done this and, you know, being like, what am I supposed to be talking about here? And the small talk and then the talk that, you know, it's just that feeling of not feeling like you fit in anywhere. Mm-hmm. And John knows that, and John embraces people that don't fit in and that don't fit that stereotype and that cookie cutter image and everything like that. And not only does he embrace them it's like basically like, I will take you in when society has shunned you. So you can watch these movies and feel like even though you don't know him personally and you're not sitting there with him and you don't have his number or anything like that, you can feel like, well, I think if no one else will get me, at least John will get me. At least John will embrace me. At least mm-hmm. John won't have a problem with who I am and wouldn't judge me. And that's a pretty amazing and special gift. And that's the power of art. I mean, art is amazing and incredible and can make you feel like you are not alone in the world when you feel alone in the world. And I think at his core, I think that's what John is trying to do with his movies, is say to people, hey, I know you haven't had a voice ever in your life, and I know you feel alone in the world, but here, I'm going to give you this little bit of entertainment. And in here, you will probably see that what I'm saying is, yeah, you may be weird, you may be different, you may be filthy, quote unquote, but I think you're beautiful and I think you're amazing. And that is the power of film and the power of John Waters in particular, is being able to give voice to people that don't have a voice and people that don't have a voice that are watching. And yes, his movies may push the boundaries and they're not for everybody. I'm not saying they are for everybody, but I think that wonderful message is lovely and important. And I think we need more of that now. I mean, I don't think we have very much of that right now, personally, you know, and John Waters isn't really out there making movies, sadly. So we don't have that voice. And we need that voice, I think, now. I mean, I'm not saying there aren't creators out there that are pushing the boundaries, because there are. But we need more of that. And we need more people that are there to be like a surrogate family in a way, or present that, or say, you're okay just the way you are. And I don't want to change you. I think you're beautiful and I want to embrace you, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of him and his films, and just who he is as a person. When you watch him in interviews, or he used to host the Independent Spirit Awards, and nobody has been able to do it as well as he did, because he's so himself. And it's not that, I mean, he doesn't give a shit, but it's not just that makes him so great to watch. It's the fact that he is not standing up there like, I'm John Waters. He's standing up there like, I'm John Waters and let's chat, or let's talk about movies, or let's talk about this, or let's celebrate the weird. And so he's just, I don't know, he's like a friend. He feels like a friend when you watch him. He doesn't feel like out of touch or out of reach, kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I think that's a beautiful thing with him. So that's why I miss him hosting the Independent Spirit Awards and watching him do that kind of stuff, because at least you got that every year. And then he stopped doing it. But yeah, he was like a part of that. He was like an integral part of that awards show. So maybe it's because the Independent Spirit Awards, I still like them, but sometimes they don't feel as independent spirit to me anymore.
So, I get you.
When you see certain ones that you're like, really? That's, the criteria is how much it was made for and all that stuff. I don't know. Anyway, for another time. But I don't know if that's part of the reason he stopped doing it. But plus, I just think that's a lot of hard work to host an award show anyway. So.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Well, was there anything else you wanted to add really quickly before we get to our new segment?
One like back and forth from Desperate Living, and it's so fresh because I just watched it today, but the character Mole, it's towards the end when they go to overthrow the queen, and Mole's like, hold it right there, you royal asshole. And then the queen fires back with, get out of my chambers, lesbians. And the way Edna Massey delivers that line, I rewound it and laughed so fucking hard. It's just, oh my God, it was hilarious. I love John Waters. I love his contributions. I don't necessarily like, not, they're not all my favorite, but I respect the early works for what they did and what, how they've kind of set the stage and for that kind of genre. And I, And it is a shame that he's not making movies anymore, but he seems to be popping up in random like TV spots here and there. So I know he's he's in like an episode or a couple episodes, like in one of the seasons of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which I haven't gotten to yet. So it must be season 4 or 5. But so I'm really excited to get to that because I'm like, what is he doing on this show? But so it's always a joy when he does pop up in these things since he's not making movies, and he makes me smile, and I love him to pieces. And and no spoiler for Stranger Things season 4 part 1, but there was a kid who was like making a movie with his sister, and she's like, you know, playing dead and like choke, you know, like she got her throat slit and she's like, ah. And this kid is that like, you know, those old crank camera of like the 80s, but he's got like this tiny little pencil mustache. And my husband's like, is he supposed to be like a little John Waters fan? And I was just like, first of all, yes. And second of all, like, I love you. You understood that reference. So, which I just think is neat. You know, I actually don't know if the kid was supposed to be, but I mean, who else rocks a pencil mustache and is directing someone whose throat has been slit? Yeah. So just the fact that even in that series, there's that tiny homage. I'm saying it's John Waters. I don't give a shit. It's that tiny homage to him because of not just the time period, but I think, how can you not, man? It's John. I don't know. I love him. I love you, John Waters.
Yes. Yeah. We both love you a lot. Yeah. Not much else to add. I think Jen said it perfectly, but yes, we love you a lot, and thank you for your art, and thank you for everything you have given to people. And I know your work means a lot to people. So thank you for that. And So now it's time. We still haven't heard from anyone wanting to create music for Finn Wittrock, for 6 Degrees of Finn Wittrock, because Carla has written songs. So I guess I'm going to have to go and find some music to put to it. But if you do want to do that, you'll get credit. And, you know, I can send you some merch if you want to cover some music to go along with the 6 Degrees of Finn Wittrock. I mean, Finn, don't be ashamed. You can also submit music. It's perfectly fine to love yourself. I know you've been submitting some audience guesses. Some audience connections using some pseudonyms. I know it's been you, Finn.
He's such a fan
of himself.
I mean, I understand, so.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with loving yourself. So if you'd like to love yourself some more.
Sounds so dirty.
I didn't mean it to, but go ahead and slide into our DMs. And help create some music for your intro song. Or if anybody out there wants to do this, DM us, email us, contact us through the contact us button on our website, and we'll kind of like throw some, maybe I'll have Carla send me some of the lyrics and I can put them as a sample out there, and you can tell me, you know, contact us if you all of a sudden get inspired to put some music to it. But we're going to go ahead and play, and I know Jen will play, so because Jen's part of my Finn crew, so I know she's going to play. We did a whole episode on her podcast about Finn Wittrock, so you know, so we're going to be playing 6 Degrees of Finn. So Jen, give me those 6 degrees. Give me those 6 degrees.
All right. Well, here they come. So all right. So this first set is really easy because I kind of cheesed out, and I got there through Law and Order SVU with Matthew Lillard, Sam Waterston, and John Waters himself. So Matthew Lillard was in Serial Mom. He was also in an episode of Law & Order SVU, as was Finn. Not the same episode, but so I don't know if these are going to completely count, but I do have others. Sam Waterston is obviously Jack McCoy in Law & Order. And of course, he shows up in Law & Order SVU. Love crossovers. And John Waters was in an episode of SVU. I think it was credited as just like porn monger or something. And I was like, oh, that is so perfect. Of course he was. And Finn was in an episode. So I, again, probably not the same ones. So stepping outside of the Law and Order universe, with the Hairspray remake, the 2007 version, it has James Marsden, who plays Cyclops in the X-Men movies and in X-Men Days of Future Past, with Evan Peters, who is in Freak Show with Finn. And then Cecil B. Demented with Stephen Dorff. He was in Public Enemies with Christian Bale, who was in The Big Short with Finn. And I'm done.
And also with our unofficial mascot, Christian yep. Effin' Bale. So.
I thought about that too. I was like, should I write Effin' Bale? So that way I say it. But I was like, oh, she'll love this one if it's not on her list.
It's not. So none of those were on my list. So I'm using Matthew Lillard, though. So Matthew Lillard, of course, was in Serial Mom. And he was in this movie called The Descendants with George Clooney. And George Clooney, of course, was in ER. He was in two shows called ER, by the way. I don't know if everybody knows that. Yes, there was a comedy ER and then the drama ER, of course, later. And Finn was in an episode of ER. So there you go. I think he was in an episode of ER. It might have been after George Clooney left. I don't know. Yeah. But there you go. And then pointing out again, because Meg would want me to point this out, Meg was also in Public Enemies.
I thought about that too when I wrote it down. I was like, I'm not going to say it.
And then I go and say it because she used that. She used that as her. She's like, I am also 6 degrees away from Finn. She's just 1 degree away from our unofficial mascot. So I don't know why she hasn't gotten on the phone to Christian and been like, hey.
Right? She's dropping the ball.
I know. Get on that, Meg. It will happen someday. The whole world is going to know when this happens.
Oh, yes.
And I'll be like, will you be our official mascot now?
Drop the unofficial. Hell yeah.
Yes.
I don't see why he would say no. I mean.
I know. I mean, I'm sure he was listening in January.
Oh, totally. He was probably very confused. He's like, how am I on a live stream? But yes. I'm sitting here.
Very good there, Jen. You started doing a little bit of the question. Yes. Yes. And if you would like to play, oh, you know what? I'm going to ask you really quickly, and I should have put this on here because you did this when I was on your podcast last. But if you want to, since you mentioned William Dafoe and you started doing a 6 degrees of Nicolas Cage, because Jen plays that on her podcast, 6 degrees of Nicolas Cage. So go ahead and give us your 6 degrees of Nicolas Cage then for John Waters.
Oh, okay. So let's see. So, Crybaby has Willem Dafoe, and Willem Dafoe was in Wild at Heart with Nicolas Cage.
There you go. Very quick.
That's super easy. Because I think I had that one for, I think maybe it was, I just edited an episode. I know I've used that path before. So that's why it was still super fresh.
There you go. And we can always use, you know, to get Finn to Nicolas Cage is pretty darn easy because, of course, once again, this is how this all came about because of Susie suggesting it too. But it came about because Finn Wittrock's cousin was one of the writers of The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which go watch that if you haven't. It's amazing. God. It's so incredible. Good. And so when I had said that to Susie, once again, that's how it came out. Susie's like, we should play 6 degrees of Finn. So, so perfect. There. Yes. So they're connected. Everybody's connected.
I love it.
But if you want to play the audience version of 6 degrees of Finn Wittrock, go to our website. It's a phantomthingpod.com. Click the page. It's literally titled 6 degrees of Finn Wittrock. Submit your choices. This month we have Queer as Folk, which, like I've said, if you go back and listen to any of our episodes, you'll get connections from me. My panelists let me down big time and didn't play, but love you all. But go listen to those. You'll get a bunch of connections. So you get that one for free. And then, I mean, you don't have to pay for this, but you know, you'll get that one without having to do any work. And then Orange is the New Black, Moonlight, and then Brokeback Mountain. And once again, one of those movies is one step away. I gave the hint on one of our Queer Folk episodes, and I'll give it again on this one, that the movie that he is one step away from, the movie that he was in, he was the token white guy.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. My friend will know what I'm talking about when I say that. There are only a few other panelists that will actually know what I'm talking about. But anyway, but go there. It's free to enter. And we will randomly select someone in the first week of July that will win some It's a Fandom Thing merch. This is something that's going to be going on for the foreseeable future. I will say there might be some times where we'll have to do it a little bit differently, like on our next episode. And Christian Bale month, we will, since they've been in a movie together. So we'll have to change that up a little bit here. But it's a lot of fun. I'm glad this is a new segment. And I can't wait till we actually get to have the intro song. Make it all more better. But we're going to go ahead and close out. This has been a lot of fun, Jen. So I enjoyed talking about John Waters again. So if you want to tell everybody where they can find your amazing podcast, My Streaming Bubble.
So, yes, I thank you again for having me on today. Any excuse to talk about John Waters is a perfect reason to talk about John Waters. So thank you for letting me just babble on again. I love him so much. You can listen to the podcast on pretty much any podcast player near you. No one needs a Pandora. And you can follow me on Twitter at Streaming Bubble. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram as My Streaming Bubble. New episodes drop Sunday mornings at 7 a.m. because I want to get that church crowd. Just kidding.
That's the real demographic that was Jen.
That's right. Those are my people. Can't even say it. So
on the way to church, listen.
On the way to church, you know, just gather the family. It'll be fine. Gather the family. new episodes every week on Sundays, and plenty of episodes to go back and revisit and check out. So you should all go do that, because that would be really awesome of you. Thanks.
Thanks. Yes. Go do that. I, on the other hand, I love you, Pandora. That
sorry, it's just a reactionary thing. You can cut that if you want.
I know that that is one of our most popular places that people listen to this podcast. Just as much as I love bubbly water. But this is Erin. You can follow me on Twitter at eAprilBeauty. The E and the A and the B are capitalized. Be sure to like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/itsafandomthingpod. On Twitter at fandomthingpod. No it's in that one. On Instagram at itsafandomthingpod. On TikTok at itsafandomthingpod. If you have any feedback, if you'd like to be a potential interview guest on the show, John Waters, feel free to reach out to us via our website. It's afandomthingpod.com. Click the contact us button and that'll shoot us an email and we'll be in touch. Or you can reach out to us directly at itsafandomthingpod@gmail.com. And on our next episode, we are wrapping up Pride Month with a look at Lady Gaga, which, if you know Lady Gaga's acting work, you'll know why I'm going to have to think of something new with Finn Wittrock, because they've literally been in their characters in bed together. And she has the thing she did to Tristan. Anyway, unforgivable.
Unforgivable, yeah.
But I love Lady Gaga a lot. So we'll be talking about her music and her acting. We're going to be focusing mainly with the acting. We're going to focus on A Star Is Born. So get ready, because you have no idea how much I love this movie. So prepared. It's the Finn level of fanning, the Christian Bale level of fanning, the that kind of stuff. I mean, I love that movie so much. Right on. And we'll be talking about, of course, American Horror Story. And then, this means I have to watch this, House of Gucci. So,
have you watched that yet, or have you avoided
it? No, I've been avoiding it because it looks horrible. I'm sorry. And I hate Jared Leto with a burning passion. And I'm not an Al Pacino fan. So.
The accusations towards Jared Leto,
he's horrible.
They're new to me. So I hadn't heard him before. And so in kind of looking at him, because I think maybe you had tweeted something. It was like something that had gone around for a while of like, oh yeah, and you know this about Jared Leto. So go ahead and Google Jared Leto in 15 years. Yeah, and I'm like, oh, that's a trap. But I did. And I was like, that's a lot of articles. That's a lot. And how is he still working? Sorry. Well, I'll stop. But
no, yeah, it's true. It's true. That's why there's also a part of me that's like, maybe we shouldn't talk about it because it's Jared Leto. I mean, like when we talked about My So-Called Life, I thought it was a little bit different because that was before anybody knew a lot of that stuff. But of course, I mean, he's a white male. So, I mean, yeah, he's gross. And he's gross even beyond the accusations and the predator stuff. Mm-hmm. He's gross. He's just not a cool person. So that's part of the and he's not a good actor, I don't think either. So frankly, I mean, I might change my mind on that because of that. So I've been contemplating that. So, but we're also going to talk about her music and her activism and stuff and what she means to the community. We'll be talking about that. And that's going to be a live stream. I'm bending the rules and letting four people be on that. Hopefully I don't regret this, but okay. I will. Jen's like, you're gonna regret this. And Carla is one of the four people. I love you, Carla.
You already lovingly regret it. No.
I know, but
it'll be good though.
It'll be fun. It'll be a good live stream and it'll be talking about music again. And we recently had a listener ask us to be covering more bands and more music. And so we are going to be later on this year, we're going to be talking about Depeche Mode. We're going to be talking about Violent Femmes. If I can find any of my panelists to be on it, we'll be talking about New Order. If not, maybe we'll be talking about another band.
Hi.
I'm not knowledgeable enough.
It's fine. Song. I got it. I'll take over. No.
And we're going to be talking about 90s music also late in the year. So we do have more music coming up. We will be talking about that. So, but also cool. We are going to be back with What We Are Into episode. So that, of course, will be giving you lots of podcast, music, books, and television and film recommendations. All that you can handle. I love those episodes. That will probably be live too. So we'll be doing two live streams this weekend, since this is dropping Friday. So look for those, and then look for those episodes to drop next week. So until next time, remember, it's a fandom thing. Black Lives Matter and Stop Asian Hate.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.